All right, welcome back to another edition of the True Crime Podcaster. I'm Ryan Horn, your host. We were formerly the White Collar Crimes Podcast. Now we have expanded to all kinds of crime, which there's plenty of out there, and we are now the True Crime Podcaster. Same host, though, and just as always, glad to have you back. Now, this name I'll mention tonight probably isn't going to ring any bells as far as the crime or anything, but it is got some unusual twists and turns. And when I say the name Piper Rountree, that probably doesn't ring any bells. Most of you probably think I'm referring to the actor Richard Rountree, who was famous for playing the Shaft character in those early 70s movies, I believe they were made. And I always kind of felt a connection to Richard Rountree in a way, because I found out that he was actually married at one time to a lady from my hometown, town I was raised in growing up, went to school in Johnson City, Illinois, and he was actually married to a woman that was from there at one time. So kind of interesting, but that is not the relation we're talking here. This is a case that involves a lot of the usual stuff in these types of cases. When you're talking about murder, there's a lot of the same motives, but this case does have a few unusual twists and turns that not all these types of cases usually do. This is a case, and this is being brought to you tonight, you'll be able to hear this one or today, whenever you happen to be hearing this, from the Weekend Angler. Check out his channel on YouTube, The Weekend Angler, proud sponsor of our podcast here. Glad that he helps bring us here every week, although we took a week off last week, and glad to have you back. I'm just glad to be here personally, because horrible tornadoes in my area, pretty much the Midwest and South a lot this week. So depending on when you're hearing this, hopefully you weren't hit by any of that, but had some pretty scary weather here in my neighborhood. But nonetheless, this case takes place in the South, actually. This involves a Virginia woman who was convicted of killing her husband. So it's not really a whodunit. We'll get it right out of the gate that she was convicted of killing her husband. But what led her to that was a little bit of an unusual path. And as I said, a few other little twists and turns in this case you want to stick around and find out about. Now, Piper Rountree, her husband, was a University of Texas communications professor named Fred, I believe I'm pronouncing this right, Jablin, G-A-B-L-I-N. And they met in 1981 when she was taking one of his classes there at the university. And after the class was over, they began dating and began a romantic relationship, which I'm sure that was probably intentional. I don't know how it was in 1981 at this school, but I imagine even then they probably had some rules and restrictions about professors dating current students. I've been an adjunct for a lot of years at a few different colleges, and I don't know that I've seen any that have like official policies on this, but I know it's just generally kind of frowned on. So I'm sure they waited till she was no longer going to be a student of his and there would be no conflict of interest. But they did begin a romance nonetheless. Now, not everybody thought necessarily that they were a good match. In fact, her sister, Tina Rountree, would later say to the TV show, CBS show, 48 Hours, she didn't think they were a good match. She stated she thought her sister actually could have done better. She thought that her sister, who I guess was a pretty attractive woman, had a lot going on, real outgoing, bubbly personality, which apparently was not so much how Fred operated as far as his personality, but she felt she could have married somebody more interesting, quote, and more successful. Now, I don't know how interesting of a person he was, but I will say, a university professor, especially a good-sized one like Texas, I don't know how Tina Rountree could not consider this a success. I would say that's a pretty successful person, but nonetheless, she thought the sister could do better. But Tina's opinion wouldn't matter a whole lot, because eventually she, Piper, and the professor would marry and seem to have a good marriage. Now, we see that and hear that all the time on this podcast. So many times things start off all right, but then eventually they go awry and they get off track. Well, I wouldn't be covering this story if there weren't anything any elements like that in this case. You know, if they went on to live happily ever after and had a good marriage, the podcast would end right here. There'd be nothing more to report. But sadly, in this case, as you'll hear, there were some things that went wrong and ultimately led to the ultimate tragedy in these cases, which is murder. Now, after having his class in 1981 and graduating, Piper enrolled in law school in 1983. Frederick continued to teach there at the University of Texas. And after graduating law school in 1986, she began practicing law. And the couple soon had a son and a daughter. So again, up until this point, everything is pretty normal and not much unusual going on. But so many times, as we see, there's just not things always as they appear to be on the surface. And later on, although at this point things were probably pretty well, things sadly do get off track. And some things you might think it could have probably at least started not long after they had a big change in their lives, because Fred would actually get a more prestigious teaching position at the University of Richmond in Virginia. And again, according to Piper's sister, I guess she thought he wasn't successful. But at least now, I don't know if her opinion changed or what, but he's gotten a higher up teaching position, something a little more lucrative apparently, maybe paid a little more money. So the family moved there from Texas, and they had yet another daughter. So at this point, she's a lawyer in Texas. He's a professor, gets a what I guess would kind of account to an upgrade or a promotion. And they moved to Virginia to start their life and end up having another child. But things didn't transfer quite as easily for Piper as moving over there as it did for the husband. I mean, he's getting, as I said, probably an upgrade, better opportunity. But for whatever reasons, Piper did not transfer her law license to Virginia. And she instead took on the role of the stay-at-home mom. Now, some women would delight in that opportunity to not have to work. I imagine being a lawyer is a pretty stressful gig, and having to, you know, I work with a lot of them in my work, so I know it can be a pretty stressful and draining career. So she at this point decides to go ahead and try being a stay-at-home mom. But this did not work out really that well at all. At this point, things actually, this is when you can say they probably actually began to get out of hand, because she ends up getting treated for depression during this time. She just wasn't completely satisfied, I guess, professionally, maybe being a stay-at-home mom. And it was reported that a lot of people think she began to get homesick. She had a pretty tight-knit circle of friends and family in Texas, and apparently this was not the case in Virginia. So they have to kind of adjust to it, and I guess she wasn't adjusting quite well to it. And she began to rack up a lot of debt during this time too, which will always put a strain on a marriage. You know, from the white collar crime, many years I covered that, and actually have a book that is still due to come out. So please stay tuned to this podcast for more updated information on that. That is still in the plans, as is the YouTube channel. Still plan on getting those out soon, a little bit delayed, but we want to make sure we got everything absolutely right before we launch it. So please stay on board for that. Really some interesting stuff. But money is a source for all kinds of crime. And unfortunately, when marriages end in murder, that's a lot of times one of the key factors. Will it be here? Now stick around and see. Because she also had an affair with a married doctor there in Virginia. And once her husband learned of this, he filed for divorce, and a bitter custody battle ensued. Because at this point, as we said, they've now got three children. It's gone beyond just these two being married. Now they've got children involved, probably a lot of property and assets and things like that. So this is going to be stressful, as you can see. And again, she's not earning in Virginia. She doesn't have her law license like she does in Texas. Did not take the bar in Virginia. Did not do whatever process would be necessary to transfer that license. So she's a stay-at-home mom with no income, now looking at a divorce. And apparently she had racked up a lot of debts, probably, I'm guessing, retail therapy to deal with her depression. And that's caused a great deal of problems. But probably what, as you just heard, the real clincher was for the husband to decide to file for divorce was her having the affair with the married doctor. Now, once this divorce was finalized, her husband Frederick got control of the children and their home. So now she does not have custody of her children, nor does she have a home. So those are two big losses right there. You almost would call these pre-crime stressors. I'm sure you've heard that term before. And these are just that, life events that are stressors and can cause problems and trigger criminal behavior. And sadly, in this case, it triggered the ultimate tragedy, as I said, a death in this case. Now, Piper, she was given visitation rights, but she was ordered to pay Fred child support, which you don't hear of that a lot. You do hear of that some. I have heard of some cases. Most of the time, let's face it, it's the mom that gets custody of the children and the dad ends up paying child support. But in this case, I'm sure they took a look at it. The judge did, that she's not earning anything in Virginia and, you know, was having some probably depression issues. She was treated for that from what it was reported. And, you know, some debt problems and that, and maybe the affair with the doctor, all that for whatever reasons, could have been others. But the judge decides to grant custody to the husband and she is going to have to pay him child support, which is difficult because, as we've seen, she's not earning in this state. So she doesn't have her kids, doesn't have her husband, doesn't have her home, doesn't have her tight circle or anything like that. And now she's been ordered by the judge to pay her husband child support. So she's got to go somewhere where she feels like she does have connections and probably can earn a living. So she does return to Texas and move in with her sister. Now he's thinking, okay, she's got a stable residence. She's got her family, her circle back, as we referred to it a little bit ago. She's got her law license there. It's probably, most likely, hopefully still active, right? So she can practice law, start making money, rebuild her life, be able to pay child support and support her children. But for whatever reason, she didn't earn well in Texas either and quickly fell behind on her child support to about the tune of $10,000. That's a lot of money, even for three kids. So apparently she probably fell behind for quite a while. Now, I didn't see any report on how much she was ordered to pay monthly or whatever the arrangements were, weekly. You know, every one of these divorce decrees are different, but that's a lot of money nonetheless, and that can cause a lot of stress because, as it said a little bit ago, she had other debts that she was facing and a lot of financial difficulty. And that certainly can place a lot of stress on somebody who is dealing with some depression issues already and had these stressors put upon him, on her. So as you can see, the tracks are being laid down, as you hear about all the time in these cases, not just on this podcast, but I'm sure a lot of you watch true crime shows and you see this all the time. You can see these tragedies coming, but it's just like a train wreck or a car wreck you see down the road, and you see it coming and it's horrifying to you, but there's nothing you can do to stop it. So a lot of you that are keen and aware of these type of behaviors and personality traits and tragic events and stressors and all these things that make up the ingredients of a bad crime, you can see this starting to form in this case. Now, she had been seeing her children on holidays and summers and things of that sort, so she doesn't have the stress of being completely taken away from her kids, which will cause unbearable stress for a man or a woman that is put in that situation. So she, even though she's behind on the child support to Frederick, there's nothing reported that I've seen that he or the courts barred her or kept her from seeing her children. Now, all this continued till about 2004, and it was just a routine morning that year on Saturday, October 30th for Fred. Got up, went out to get the newspaper, but sadly that was the last thing he did on earth because he was gunned down while trying to get that newspaper. Now, neighbors understandably were horrified. I'm sure this was a nice quiet neighborhood, probably in the university town, not, you know, probably a lot of other professors and a lot of professionals live close by. So I doubt it was a neighborhood where a lot of this kind of stuff happened. And they knew of no one, from what they told the police, that they believed would do this to the professor. Mild-mannered guy, well-liked, nothing controversial about him really that we've ever read. So neighbors were a little puzzled too. Now, Fred's son, on the other hand, did say that his mother was in Houston at the time this murder happened. So they talked to the kid, and, you know, because a lot of times the spouse or ex-spouse is naturally, it's just protocol, going to be the first suspect in a case like this. And seems at this point she's got an alibi established, right? Well, that's not necessarily the case. They did a little digging around, because any good police detective will not just take things always at face value, but look into them a little bit. And cell phone records showed that cell phone records showed that though she would be in Richmond when she talked to her son that day before, that she was in Richmond the day before when she talked to her son. So even though she was back in Houston at the time, supposedly after this happened, after police interviewed, cell phone records shown that she had been in Houston at that time, or I'm sorry, in Richmond at that time. So even though her son, you know, I don't think he was lying, he's a little kid, probably just thought, yeah, mom's back, I talked to her on the phone, she's back in Houston. Well, cell phone records showed that she was, as I said, in Richmond at that time. And flight logs, police checked, also had a Roundtree on the flight list, but it was Tina. So police travel to Houston, they get a hold of Tina, and they interview her the next day. This is October 31st, the day after Frederick's murder, and she denies being in Richmond at all. Now, an airline employee described someone, or the police actually described her as being argumentative and aggressive in her interview. So she's very hostile, dismissive. You got the wrong person, even though her name's on the flight log. But at the same time, you have mom's cell phone records in that area too. So which round tree is it at this point? Because would it be that maybe Tina just wanted to kill the husband to get her sister out of debt? You know, she's living with her sister. Her sister's probably well explained her financial difficulties, being behind on child support, all of these type of things. So maybe the sister is involved. Maybe she is the right round tree that they need. So are they going to arrest her? Well, like I said, it's not off to a good start. They're not getting probably a lot of information out of her, being combative and confrontational. So they go around and check with the airline employees, because as I said, her name is on the flight log to Houston. And an airline employer told her that the round tree he saw was blonde. And this presented a problem initially for the police, so they thought, because Piper was a brunette. So again, things are starting to lead and look toward Tina. So was Tina the actual killer of the professor? Thankfully, again, more good investigative police work. I got to hand it to the investigators in this case. They were very thorough, and they left no stone unturned. Because a further investigation would reveal that Piper had bought a .38 caliber gun just a few days before the shooting or so, a few days, few weeks, and a .38 was actually the gun that was used to kill her husband. And she just happened to buy a blonde wig the week before the murder. So, yeah, Piper was a brunette, but was she sporting a blonde wig? She just coincidentally bought the type of handgun that was used to kill her husband, and also the wig to throw police off, or who knows, maybe frame her sister. More on that in just a second. Well, police caught a break, because Piper happened to be in Richmond the very next week on November 8th for a child custody hearing, and police nabbed her while she was there. And it was reported, actually, that the judge would entrust and rule custody of the children to be left to Frederick's brother. So police nab her, they charge her with murder, kids go to live with their uncle. I doubt even had the murder not even if she was not the prime suspect in at this point, I would say probably a good chance the judge would not have given her custody of these kids, being the fact that he denied her custody before and ruled in favor of the husband. And but now she's got bigger problems, because she's been charged with her husband's murder. Now, a few years later, in February of 2005, she went on trial for her husband's murder. And as I said about her sister, was she trying to frame her sister? Well, yeah, she certainly threw her sister under the bus. And that was her defense, basically, that it was her sister Tina that did it. Thankfully, the jury bought none of that nonsense and really only took about an hour to convict her for a murder. So that shows how strong and damning the evidence probably was against her, because Usually a murder case, it's not unusual for juries to deliberate for hours, days, or even weeks. And that was one of the things that bothered me when I was a college student at the time of the O.J. Simpson murder. This was at the time the longest trial in history. And I think the jury deliberated maybe three and a half hours and then come back with a not guilty verdict, which we all know, most of us do, that he was guilty of that, but got away with it. But that's a whole other subject. Don't want to, you know, it'd be a good podcast maybe we'll do in the future on that case. But the jury bought none of her nonsense and only took about an hour to convict her of the murder. Now, her sister Tina, though, wasn't the murderer. She didn't get off scot-free either, though. She got, I mean, it wasn't really a harsh penalty, but she did get a misdemeanor conviction for her role in this by tampering with evidence, helping Piper cover some things up. So she didn't get off scot-free, even though she was involved in, probably not that they had any, they didn't have any evidence she was involved in the planning, but they certainly had evidence that she was involved in the cover-up and tampering with evidence, and that netted her a misdemeanor conviction, which for those of you maybe listening from other countries, a misdemeanor is a lesser crime. In the United States, it's punishable by less than a year in jail. Usually probation or fines are how a lot of these cases are handled, or some combination of those things. But misdemeanors are not sentences that you can be sent to prison for. So she got, you know, a relatively light sentence compared to her sister. Because what penalty and what sentence did Piper get? Well, she got 60 years in prison. Or I'm sorry, she got... She was sentenced to life in prison. And she's really lucky, in my opinion, because it could have been a lot worse. I don't know at the time if Virginia had a death penalty, but I know it could have been worse. If it would have happened in Texas, I would say she would have faced a far greater probability of having a death sentence carried out, because Texas is one of those states that doesn't mess around. They're certainly swift and severe in their justice a lot of times, and they issue a lot of death sentences in the case, and she probably would have qualified for it if it happened there. But since this case happened in Virginia, I'm not sure if they had one, or maybe if they have it and just don't use it a lot. But she got a life sentence. Now, supposedly she is eligible for parole, I think, when she's maybe 60 or in her 60s or something to that effect. But I've not seen any reports that she's been paroled or is likely to get it. So she will likely spend a good part, if not her entire rest of her life, in prison. And all over some stress. Now, I got to wonder, though, how much it did say she was treated for depression. Maybe if there were other signs along the way that people missed or something that could have avoided it, but it sounds like it was just some good old financial stress and maybe a little greed, who knows, not wanting to have to pay the money, and maybe the humiliation of losing custody and having to pay child support were too much for her. But bottom line, that was really a small amount to pay to take somebody's life. I'm sure $10,000 she could have looked at a bankruptcy or a refinancing or getting some type of help. And as I said earlier, it wasn't like that there's any evidence the courts or her husband were denying her access to her children. So really a senseless crime, and hopefully she'll stay locked up for it the rest of her life. But yeah, we may talk about OJ soon, and I did want to say we've got an episode coming up, a special guest. We're going to talk about how much bureaucracy has always and is still to this day crippling law enforcement and just destroying our criminal justice system. So you want to check that out here soon. So please look for us every week on each podcast we have. We have them out on Tuesday. Please check out our website, truecrimepodcaster.com. Check out our Facebook page. And also, please follow us on Apple, Google, Spotify, wherever you're hearing us. Give the good 5-star rating and subscribe to get some little extra bonuses and goodies. Always glad, too, to supply you voiceover work for your next project. Check out my professional voiceover site at ryan-horn.com. And lastly, as always, please adopt your next best friend at your local pet shelter. I guarantee you will not regret it. We have 4 dogs and 2 cats that we've done just that with, and we have not regretted a single one of them. So thank you for tuning in. Please watch out for your friends and family. There are a lot of predators of all type, whether financial or violent criminals out there, and we got to watch out for them and watch out for those we love. So we love it that you tune in here for us every week and help support us and keep this going. Please tune in next time. God bless. Take care, everybody. See you then.